You're listening to the Colts Blue Zone Podcast with Mike Chappell and Dave Griffiths.
Inside the Fox 59 CBS 4 podcast studio, welcome to the Colts Blue Zone Podcast. Alongside Mike Chappell and Matt Adams, I'm Dave Griffiths. So glad to have you along for the show as the NFL draft, as we tape this podcast, is
the draft is this week?
One day away.
Who knew?
I feel like we've talked about this a little bit in the past couple weeks.
Just from time to time. We will, of course, get into our thoughts on the draft. The infamous Dave Griffiths all-RAS mock draft is coming, ladies and gentlemen.
You got seven guys?
I have nine guys, oh, in fact, because I swung two trades.
I bet you hit two.
I might have. I got three last year. Like I said, I got Anthony Richardson, I got Juju Brents, and I got the seventh round offensive tackle, Jake Witt, out of Michigan somewhere.
I think that is one of the most impressive things.
Thank you.
To nail a seventh rounder.
Yeah, darn right.
Based on our
directional Michigan.
Exactly. And so maybe I'll hit three again this year. That would be fantastic. Plenty more otherwise else to get to. The Colts million dollar schedule challenge is out. We'll give you some details on that. Matt,
what are the odds on that?
Probably a lot worse than me hitting a couple of those draft picks in this mock draft. And also some draft notes for us as the draft is just one day away. But we should begin with, once again, our esteemed, venerable reporter, Mike Chappell, getting a chat with the owner of the Indianapolis Colts, Jim Irsay, this week. Talked over the phone and shared some details from his perspective on the events that went down. Chap, why don't you? I'll kind of cede the floor to you. Let you kind of direct where this conversation goes. Well, what you think were the most newsworthy points of your discussion with Jim, which you can read about, by the way, online, fox59.com, cbs4indy.com as well. Chap, go ahead.
Yeah, it was. It had been. I'd talked to him in March during that when Freeney announced him as his to induct him, and we talked for a while there. This was like on Tuesday, I think it was, or Monday. But it would have been Monday. The days run together. But we talked for, gosh, 20, 25 minutes. And
so you asked him like one question during that time?
Yeah, but it's funny because anyone who knows Jim, and with all due respect to the owner, there are times you have to be rude and cut in to get a question in. But a lot of times you just kind of wind him up and let him go. And he really opened up a lot about his health situation, and he offered, because it's a little awkward to pry into it. I realize we're in the reporting business, but you know, health matters are private matters. But one of the first things he said it wasn't an overdose, referring obviously to the December 8th incident where paramedics and police were dispatched to his home in Carmel, 911 call. And this everything stemmed from what they wrote on the incident report that our people came up with right away, that it was a suspected overdose. You know, it was unresponsive and bluish, and they administered Narcan and all that. But he was very much defensive about, from his point, setting the record straight. And people couldn't believe him or not. It's really hard to sit there and call BS on somebody when they're telling you their side of things. So, but he just said he was dealing with a leg injury at the time, developed a hematoma, and it got to be very serious. And that's what everything stemmed from. And, I don't know how else you take him, but at his word. And if it was something different, then that's between him and his family and his doctors. But the bottom line is he's doing better. He doesn't have his mobility because after that leg injury situation, he had back/leg surgery that was pretty significant, and it cut into his mobility, and he's in rehab mode now. He won't be at the draft in the war room, although he said with today's technology, it's like he's going to be the virtual reality with the goggles.
Mm-hmm.
To where he said, I'll have Chris in front of me and Shane in back of me or whatever. And so hopefully he won't pull out like a lightsaber and start tearing up the war room. But the bottom line is he will have as much influence as he has had, as much as he wants, as much as he needs. But in the end, Chris Ballard runs the draft. with input, obviously, from the owner. But this is Chris Ballard's draft. And I did say, well, if you're not in a war room, how are you going to twist Chris's arm to get Marvin Harrison Jr.? So, you know, and he sort of mentioned, you know, how much they like Marvin Jr., but going from 15 to what it would take.
Four or five.
Yeah, I mean, and it five, and then you hope no one takes him at four.
Right, that's the problem.
So, but it was good to talk to him, and you know, again, the gist of it was that he mentioned it two or three times, and it wasn't an overdose. And this is a man who has spoken at length and several times openly about his past of addictions, which all I guess are traced to his youth of powerlifting. And marathons and what he put his body through physically. And he said, yeah, this, you know, he's had 26 or 27 surgeries in the last 7 or 8 years. So those of us who've had surgeries realize that for a while you're on pain meds.
Oh yeah.
Some more than others. And when you string all those numbers together, you're on pain meds for quite a while. So you just hope that he's certainly on the way back. I think he is. I think there's a good chance he talks this weekend, because he said, well, looking forward to talking to you guys this weekend. I certainly don't think it'll be in person.
Right.
I can see a virtual meeting with the media. So considering where we all thought this was in late December, January, I'm very encouraged with where he is.
Yeah. And I'll chime in and say that I'll kind of echo something that you brought up. Having 26 surgeries in 8 years is an astounding number. And you're right. You hop from one to the next. You hop from one rehab and you're on drugs to the next rehab when you're on drugs. And shoot, I'm still on the lower side of 40, just barely. And I know that my body is not the same now as it was 10 years ago.
And like you said, when you're 64 going on 65, you said the body doesn't respond like it did when you were 40 as far as rehab.
Uh-huh. And I'm not... I think that I'm happy that Jim sent his story out there and said what his perspective was of what happened. And it's just, it's a confusing scenario where the police say one thing because they're trained to recognize these things themselves, and they've seen them multiple times themselves, probably, for the most part. I'd say most officers have responded to calls that have had, I hate to say similar scenarios, but some scenarios where they have observed overdoses. You just have to look at police reports and see how often, unfortunately, it happens. But you get one story from the police. You get one story from Jim Irsay.
One story from the team.
Had a separate story, too, about a severe respiratory issue. So it's annoying, I think, to get all these different lines, especially between Jim Irsay and the team, because those two you would hope to be on the same page.
Well, even the 911 tape that we chose not to play, it was mentioned that it was a congenital heart issue. So it's you're right. Whenever there's differing stories, you just look, you know, with skepticism. But unless someone's willing to or able to get much deeper into the story, which family-wise, I just don't see this family doing that for a lot of reasons.
I don't either, yeah.
For a lot of reasons.
Right.
So the main thing is that he is on the mend, and his next big goal as far as being able to do things is to be in Canton on August 3rd, to be on stage with Dwight Freeney, because that means, I'm telling you, it means a ton, you know, from Marvin Harrison to Edger and now Dwight. It means a ton to an owner who understands the history of the game to be asked to do it for a third time, and he needs to be there to do it.
Well, we'll see if he's able to recover by then, and hopefully he is. That'd be great to see him up there. I know Colts fans love to see him there, of course, presenting Edge and Marv before, and now it's Dwight's turn. So
I keep thinking, like, usually when you think about this, you think of it in terms of a player who's recovering from an injury, but like, will he be at training camp? Will he be ready in time for training camp? Because we always know that every year, pretty much, Irsay goes and he kind of holds court out there and talks a lot about the team and the excitement and everything leading up to it. And I think it's something he looks forward to, but wanting to be in Canton may supersede that depending upon how things develop over the next couple months.
Well, that's about the time that he shows up in training camp, too. it's always that, like, that first week, which would be the last week of July or the first
it's
week
like
of
the night practice, you know, when all the fans are out there.
Right. And there have been times that he's not been very mobile.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, he comes out there on his golf cart, and there are times that he's had to kind of sit in the golf cart.
Right.
So, you know, I think it's very important to him to be very public in his running of the team, to be seen, to interact with the fans, because he understands that the fans, without the fans, he's got just a business.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very important, and he values interaction. One of the reasons, I believe, that they're still off-site for training camp. I know Chris Ballard feels the same way, the importance of interacting players. That's the one, that 2 or 3 week period, it's when fans can actually reach out and touch the team. One of the few times.
Mm-hmm.
And so it'll be very important. But, you know, August 3rd in Canton, that's really what he's got circled on his calendar.
So all the best to Jim during his recovery and rehab process. We can all hope and pray that he doesn't become more like Jerry Jones, who just goes off and starts spouting about, I don't know what he's saying, about their quarterback, Dak Prescott.
I need to look at those quotes about...
It was a funky quote. That's the thing. Like, if I even read it right now, it would be weird. Like, it's just, he said something that was really strange.
This is after saying they were all in and they did nothing.
Yeah.
So, you know, and we can argue when the Colts said they were all in on what they did, but
you
paint yourself into a corner, and I tell you, the media's not going to let you go.
No, definitely not. One thing the Colts did when they were all in was they signed Matt Ryan to be their quarterback, and Matt Ryan has announced his retirement from the NFL. It includes one rather unmistakably memorable season with the Colts. But was with the Atlanta Falcons, drafted there at 22 years old. He's now 38, 16 years later. He signed a one-day contract with the Falcons so he could retire with the franchise. It's unfortunate his career ended the way it did, but he had a tremendous MVP season. He had some elite guys to throw to there for his career, whether it was Julio Jones, Tony
Roddy
Gonzalez.
Roddy White early on.
And then I think he got 1 year of Calvin Ridley there at the end and before he moved on. But Matt Ryan's retiring, and he stepped into broadcasting pretty gracefully, I thought, last year, Chap, because he's a pretty knowledgeable guy in the booth, and that's not the same for everybody who comes out of it. But he seemed like he stepped into it really well. So he's got 1 foot in the next career already, but we'll remember him for of course what he did on the field for here in Indianapolis, unfortunately.
That was, it's funny how much vitriol is still there, because I mentioned how, you know, the local, the indie media, we got the 1 year with Matt Ryan, and it was that awful, I'll use another word, but 2022 season. And I said, I don't know that anyone could have handled it with more class.
Yep.
And this, of course, then people say, well, he was one of the reasons it was such a crappy season.
Yep.
And you can't argue.
Nope.
So it was just a bad situation, and you know, mandating going from him to Ellinger and 33 to 9, it was a season that you had to be here to really appreciate how bad it was. But no, I thought the time he was here when we had him, I remember the day that the whatever it was, Monday or Wednesday, when it was mandated that they were going from him to Ellinger, which coincided with him having a shoulder injury. So,
right.
But he was made available, or he was either made available or he wanted to talk to the media to talk about being replaced.
Right.
How many quarterbacks do that? Not very many.
No.
And the next discussion will be, is he Hall of Fame? I don't know. Probably not. I think probably not. He's Philip Rivers with a Super Bowl. He's got a Super Bowl appearance. Which would you rather have, Philip Rivers? You know, I don't know, but I don't think either one of those are really Hall of Fame guys. But that doesn't diminish the career he had.
Right.
What a tremendous career! He's top 7 or 8 in all time categories. So I think just a class guy. And like you said, the transition was smooth, and it shouldn't surprise anyone who's been around him about how intelligent and how conversational he is. So good luck to him post-NFL, which has already begun. Mm-hmm. It's kind of funny he announces his retirement a year after not playing and being in the booth. But all things happen.
There might have been some financial considerations involved in
that's
that.
Probably true.
Huh? What? What are you talking about? Yes.
Yeah, the cult owed him something.
Yeah, I believe they owed him money, and if he'd retired, then he wouldn't have collected it. So, and just happened to be the
deadline.
Life
is all about timing.
There you go, indeed. Jim Irsay is offering $1 million to a fan who can correctly match the opponents and the bye week for the correct week of the NFL schedule this season. The team has done this, of course, in the past. No one has hit it big because
I think Fox 59 should do the same thing. Just,
yeah, right.
Just double it.
Just because? We'll double it. Okay. Well, we'll take it out of your paycheck. And,
well, never not. Never mind.
Right? So whoever finishes the closest to the prediction does win a VIP home opener experience, which includes travel, hotel, sideline passes, Colts gear, and $50 in concession stand.
I think you need to hit even though you were the closest, you still need to hit the opener. Shouldn't you be able to have to pick the opener in your...
To go to the opener?
To go to the opener.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
Seems only fitting, right?
No kidding. Yeah. So...
What do you think the odds are?
Well, it would be...
It's an 18-week...
So it would be...
Equation.
Wouldn't it be like 18 times 17 yes. times 16? Yeah, it's like 18 factorial.
Could you do that,
we could calculate.
You're not doing a hell of a lot right now. Why don't you go ahead and do that and let us know?
What is 18 factorial? Whatever it is.
Yeah.
Going back to my old high school, probably
but
algebra 3
it's
kind
of cool because they're going to get thousands and thousands of people that take the shot at it. And it's one of those that's... It's a lot longer odds than... One of the pro golfers hitting a hole in one on the target course or the target hole or whatever, but it's always a neat thing to do. It's kind of like the lottery.
It's a number I can't really even quantify. So it's a large.
It's a big one. Huh?
Yeah, okay. Yeah. There's exponentials involved.
Yes. All right. So it's going to be a long challenge, but hey, maybe someone can do.
Who's
going to
open
it?
The schedule comes out in 2 weeks, I believe.
Yep.
Jacksonville. Are you? Can you pack for Jacksonville?
Pack right now.
I wouldn't let you go.
Right? You're gonna.
I would find something for you to do that weekend. But that's just
me. Back here in the station.
Slash your tires and hog tie in the back closet, Dave.
Anybody seen Dave this weekend? Well, I know he's not in Jacksonville.
I think he had an unannounced vacation, if I recall correctly.
Chaps out on the tarmac with a hacksaw at the plane, going at one of the engines. No. But some things. We all look forward to every year, and that is one thing that I do not look forward to every year. But I still go because I don't know.
I think they have an overseas game this year? Probably not.
I don't think so. They did. They did.
In fact, they did Germany.
So.
Normally, there's a rotation with the rest of the league.
Right.
So yeah, I would think probably.
I was gonna say. Well, they would have announced that already, but that's not the case. They've announced like who the home team is for those games, and some of the opponents aren't.
They announced the Brazil game.
Right. And right. Some of the other ones I don't think they've said yet. So
those will be drip out by the NFL.
Yeah. All right, let's get to the draft. One more day, April 25th, Detroit, Michigan. The Colts have all their own picks right now, first through seventh round.
Over under 7.5, you take
over. I would hammer the over if that was an actual number. I would bet the mortgage on over for 7.5 picks. I'd probably still bet over on 8.5.
I'm guessing they have 9 at the end of it.
Yep, that's what I got. Again, in Dave's all RAS draft, I had.
Unless
9.
They move up, and then it's going to be like 6.
And I actually got 2 picks for next year as well. So
say one of the mocks had the Colts giving up 3 draft picks to move up.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what the other repercussions in that draft were, whether they traded down later and picked up more.
Right.
But I'm like, I just cannot see them giving up that much.
It was what I put out there on Monday was, I think I included 15 mock drafts from people that people know,
right?
And 5 of them had move ups, Chicago to 9, and one of them was to 8,
right?
Several of them, a couple that I've seen were 9 to get up to get Brock Bowers,
and then there was one that I put out there that if it happens I will get up and walk out of the press room. It was moving down to 29. And drafting a linebacker.
I saw that too.
I thought no. No.
Yeah, the guy out of NC State that
right.
Yeah, is like the one highest linebacker.
Peyton Wilson.
Yeah.
He could be the best
Chapel will throw up his hands.
Say, get out of here.
No
Can he run routes and catch balls? Can he cover?
Yeah.
So we'll see.
Right. Colts.com, our good friend JJ over there tracks mock drafts as well. He tracks 21, and 15 of those 21 have the Colts taking a cornerback, which is obviously the most likely scenario when you look, Chap, at what other people think. They look at the Colts roster.
Correct.
Chris Ballard has said, and he told us the other week about corners, like he says at least that he doesn't view it quite the same, I think, as maybe nationally it's viewed. He thinks that those young guys, they're not rookies anymore, so they shouldn't be considered rookies anymore.
And that they played better than a lot of people gave him credit for.
Right.
As the season unfolded.
He compared it to the offensive line 2 years ago.
When we were whipping, what did he say, whipping their ass?
Yes.
Well, they were awful.
Exactly. They deserved it at that point. So he views kind of the cornerbacks in that, at least he's telling us he views the cornerbacks in that same light. It's not an obvious, it has to be a cornerback. But if you look at the roster and you see proven players at different levels, there's not as many proven players in the secondary as there are at some other places. So that's what I think nationally people obviously gravitate to. And there's a little bit of talent there in the first round, especially with the trove of offensive talent that's going to go in the top 10 picks. I don't think there has never been an NFL draft where no defender has been taken in the top 10. This could be like that. So the top defenders might fall to the Colts.
So the first or second corner might fall to you?
Right.
The best pass rusher might fall to you. So, yeah, I sort of expect them to take the corner. Was it Quinyon Mitchell.
Mm-hmm.
Tarion Arnold? I would take a receiver. I just would. You're going to get – staying where you are, you're probably going to get the third best receiver, or it might be the fourth best receiver. But again,
it'd have to be fourth. I mean, you're gonna have
Marvin
and Harrison and Odunze all taken.
Right,
you'll have to move up to 8 or 9 to get one of those guys. I just they've talked about, you know, adding explosive players and adding, you know, running after the catch and all this stuff. And this league is all about, yes, a solid roster. Of course, a solid roster. If you don't have a solid roster, then your depth will lose you games. But you have to have difference-making players. I would rather have a difference-making offensive player, receiver, who can – and I would probably – I'll tell you, an interesting discussion is, would you rather have one of the top three receivers? Let's say the third receiver, because you're not going to move up to – or Brock Bowers. I would probably take the outside receiver because of what he can do, and then the rest of your tight ends might be better. I would rather have the elite receiver and a – boy, I don't want to diminish it too much, but a second-tier cornerback that you'd get in round two.
Right.
Then the other way around. I just – with a young quarterback, and I just beat the dead horse. I'm always influenced by the way Bill Pullian did it with Peyton, you know, Reggie or Edgerton and Reggie and Gonzalez and Dallas Clark and on and on and on. And I just think to give, when everything that you're going to do over the next 8 years, 10 years depends on Richardson, and it does, then give him every chance to excel. And I think a flat-out elite receiver would do that more than a corner. And like you said, you can argue very strongly that the need for a starting corner is more important, more pressing than a need for a receiver who would probably step in and be a starter if you take him that high. But I would err on the side of giving my young quarterback every chance to succeed. And that'll be my personnel flaw till I die.
And I think that it goes into – what Chris Ballard told us again the other day about how many first-round grades he has. He says about between 19 and 21. Like, is one of those bottom ones, would that be like a fourth receiver? Maybe he has Xavier Worthy on Thomas Jr. from LSU.
I'd take Brian Thomas.
I know. I would
15,
too, man.
I would. I just would.
I love him. But do they sneak in there and then give Chris – the gumption to take them, or do they only, you know, have those top three guys? Because obviously those three have to be. Every NFL team is going to put those top three receivers and give them a first round grade, because some of them would be number one receivers in other drafts. This is an incredible draft for wide receivers if you're picking in the top 10.
I think I've seen like guys taking, you know, a minimum six receivers in round one.
Yep.
And if the top three guys are gone at 15, which they will be, and you like two or three other guys, is that where you slide back to?
Right.
18, 19, 20. Yeah. I wouldn't slide back too far.
No, I wouldn't either. And then Brock Bowers is, of course, another option. And four of the 21 mock drafts that Colts.com has been tracking had the Colts taking Brock Bowers. He was the third most mocked player. Number one was Quinyon Mitchell, who you brought up earlier. Number two was Cooper DeJean out of Iowa. Number three is Brock Bowers, by far the most selected offensive player. Somebody had them taking Malik Nabers, which was a trade up.
Yeah, it was a trade up to, I think, seven
yeah.
in order to get there. And I think they had to give up quite a bit to get up there.
I would think they would, too, because at that point you might still be in the court, like people offering for quarterback deal right. or thinking about quarterback deals range. You'd have to offer quite a bit to get up to seven.
And these moves more than likely won't be made until somebody's on the clock.
You have to see who's available.
Yep. Right. You're not going to trade today for number six because you just, with the idea you're going to get this guy, because you don't know what's going to happen the five above you. So, but yeah, this will be very interesting because 15 is such an interesting spot because you can go up or down.
Yep.
More likely down, probably, just because the higher you go, giving up two or three picks. And if you go very high, you're giving up next year's number one. And I just can't see him doing that.
Right. I would think that if the Colts move up, as Chris said to us just last week, it would have to be within striking distance. And going up to get Marvin Harrison at four is not
That's
within
not striking distance.
No, it's just not. And so if Roma Dunze is still there when the Chicago Bears are on the clock at nine, maybe. But I think the Bears would want him. That's the thing. Like they're just drafting Caleb Williams number one overall.
Yeah, go get him a weapon.
Exactly. So you'd have to give up probably something pretty spectacular to be able to sneak up there into the top 10.
And that doesn't
10.
Include, like somebody said, well, throw in Alec Pierce. That's not going to move the needle at all on
yeah,
a trade
exactly.
package.
Sorry, no. Right. Like people are throwing Josh Downs. It's not. It doesn't work like that.
And don't throw in Josh Downs, for heaven's sake.
That diminishes what you're getting
right.
with the pick because you're taking a quality player out of the
right.
out of the groom.
Right. So anyway, to move up to the top 10, I still think nine would be something. Like and. I think it's the Jets that I've seen a lot of mocks taking Brock Bowers there at 10. Give Aaron Rodgers a little bit more weapons now that they've tried to solidify the offensive line a little bit in free agency. So you'd have to get into the top 10 to secure a better shot at Bowers. But who knows? Maybe the Jets keep going offensive line, and they take an offensive lineman, and then you get to 11. And then that's certainly, I think, within striking distance to
that
move from 15.
That would be round two with Jonathan Taylor when you're sitting at 44.
Yes.
And all of a sudden he's still here and you move to 41 to get him.
Yes.
That's striking distance.
Yes. So if Brock Bowers gets past the Jets 10, that is the first point that I would be on alert saying, okay, the Colts might actually make a move up here.
Because then you're debating probably Brock Bowers or the fourth receiver.
Yeah.
How people have the fourth receiver graded. It's funny when you look at all these draft boards and they're people's top 50, top 100, it may not even resemble how Chris Ballard and his guys rate these players.
We have no idea how their board looks.
You know, somebody has Xavier Worthy at the bottom of round one. Maybe he thinks, you know, because one of the reports I saw is that Reggie was at his pro day. Maybe Reggie came back and said, Man,
4-2-1.
Remember how I like Josh Downs at the combine?
Yeah,
I like this guy more. Yeah. But so you just don't know. But it only matters. It's like with everything that goes on in the league, whether it's free agency or whatever. It's how one team values and evaluates that rookie, that veteran to give him whatever money. So it just takes one team to fall in love with a player.
Yep. The great thing about going to Texas Pro Day is you have Xavier Worthy and you have Adonai Mitchell mm-hmm. there. So you have two receivers there that some people consider to be first-round talents.
And if they
talents.
Like one of those guys, then you take the corner at 15. Take the corner at 15.
Uh-huh.
And then maybe with that 46 pick, move up higher.
Yeah.
With the idea you're going to get one of those guys. So there's a lot of options. Again, I would rather have the really, really elite receiver potentially as opposed to a lockdown corner.
Yeah, at 15, I think perhaps a decision that the Colts are going to have there at 15 is the best receivers in this draft are gone, but the best cornerbacks are right there. And so those are two positions that I think we can all agree upon. We would like to see the Colts add to both of those rooms at some point in this draft because you think that they could both use a little bit of boost. So they have to make the decision, do we take one of the best corners in a position on the defensive side of the ball that does not help Anthony Richardson directly, of course. It does indirectly, obviously. You're on the same team. Or do we take a wide receiver slash playmaker, whether it's Brock Bowers or whoever, that does directly help Anthony Richardson but is not quite at the same playmaking ability as the best players in this draft? That's what it's going to come down to. So I think in order to take a defensive player here in the first round, I really do think it's going to have to be a dynamic defensive player.
That's why, what if one of those top edge rushers?
Yes.
Jared Verse or Dallas Turner.
Mm-hmm.
What we shouldn't forget is they made a really, really strong push for Daniel Hunter, which told me that they thought as good as the pass rush was last year, they needed that guy. So maybe you're still driven by the fact that as good as you think you may have that defensive front with all the players are coming back, you still need that catalyst guy. And again, I would err on the side of offense, but I will understand if they do defense with a corner or an edge rusher. Linebacker, I will get up and walk out of the room.
I will join you, and we will be done for the day. Chris can come out and say whatever he wants. I'm not listening to you.
You've lost me.
Yeah, but
I know it's lying season. I know it's dishonesty season.
Smokescreen season.
When Ballard talks about his cornerbacks, and they have Dale Baker Jr., young guy. You've got Juju. You've got Jalen Jones. They invest draft picks in two of those
Dallas
guys.
Dallas Flowers
is still there. And then you think about Hunter and that they pursued him, that they were willing to try to pay him to get him here in Indianapolis. That tells me that I think by their actions, they believe there's a need out there for outside pass rusher. So if they are at 15 and they do have Dallas Turner or Jared Verse there on the board, maybe they kind of go in that direction because they think they're okay at corner and they can go and get one of the other wide receivers later.
Because the reasoning being if you get a pass rusher who's going to affect the quarterback, then you can – quote, get by
right
with the corners.
It might help your secondary.
Right.
But of course, remember, guys, the Colts had a deal done for L'Jarius Sneed.
Well,
I mean, it was done.
Clearly,
right?
Clearly.
It was all done.
I'm waiting for pre-orders.
You all should see Chap's face right now, everyone who's listening.
Yeah, that was one of those where you think, really? And it's one of those where it doesn't happen and there's no one remembers that.
No.
He was coming here.
He was here. He was here. It was done. It was finished. Just a sign on the dotted line. Josh McDaniels style.
What a weekend that was.
That was a fun weekend. Yes, very fun weekend. Hopefully this weekend's a little bit funner, more fun, whatever, for the Colts. But anyway, let's see. Mitchell and DeGene, still the top two picks there for the Colts, and the defensive-offensive split is similar to what Matt and I discussed last week when Chap was in concussion protocol and unable to join us here. But fortunately, he got cleared by the independent neurologist, and he's good to go.
There are times that drugs are good.
Yes.
So that time, drugs were good.
Yes, drugs are good. Drugs are good, okay?
More drugs are better.
Yes. Well, yeah. There's a bunch.
Do you think at some point they take a running back? Yes.
I think that that's within the realm of possibility. I don't think they want to take one too high because you want to not run Jonathan Taylor into the ground, but you want to give him the ball, I think, more than he did last year splitting it with Zach Moss, and because you want your playmakers on the field. So I think Taylor's going to be out there a lot this next year.
Yeah,
so, I have no problem getting another guy. And, like, I could even flex between more of a power guy like an Audric Estime from Notre Dame or a more gadget guy, we will say, that's better catching out of the backfield. I think you could go with either way.
You've got Evan Hall coming back.
Because, you have Evan Hall and you have Trey Sermon
right
now.
Sermon's
you have
there
two
too.
Different guys right there that kind of are in those two roles right now, but no one to say, hey, he's locked in as the number two. He's got his role. We know exactly what it's going to be. No, you want to bring in somebody to at one of those two spots as more competition for one, if not both of those guys.
I could see an offensive lineman third round, fourth round.
Oh, yeah. I can absolutely see
an
offensive
lineman. And then the debate is interior or tackle. Keep in mind that Ryan Kelly is a free agent after this season, and I believe Will Fries is too. And talking to Ryan Kelly, he thinks 10's a really good number, which would mean this year and next year, similar to what Costanzo played. So you have to be planning for life after Ryan Kelly. You just do.
Let me tell you this. Dave's all-RAS draft is going to be very interesting if we're talking offensive linemen in those middle rounds.
Interior.
Exactly. Interior. Offensive linemen.
Because, again, you can never have too many tackles. And maybe there's some question about Braden Smith. He had a good year when he was healthy, but he wasn't healthy.
Right.
And he's coming off knee surgery. But you did see promise from Blake Freeland.
I mean, he had to go up against Myles Garrett, for crying out loud.
They Bernard Raimann him last year, where they said, "Here, go play."
Even worse.
Go play. There's not much worse than putting Raimann out there in Denver with like one practice.
Right. Yeah. Good point.
But you know, you're always, and Ballard talked about this, how you're always, it's funny, as a GM and your scout guys, you're always looking a year, 2 years, 3 years down the road. Well, this guy, as we talk, Ryan Kelly's going to be a free agent, and you know, in 2 years, Braden Smith's going to be a free agent. So you're always looking, how are we going to replace him? And the coach says, screw that. I need to win now.
Right.
Give me a player now. So that's why there's always that fine balance. But I can see at some point an interior lineman. And I wouldn't – I've seen some people having the Colts take a safety, like third round. I wouldn't. I would go out and get me a veteran free agent for – $5 million, $6 million, and feel good about the group I've got then.
And they have room now, of course, with their working around with DeForest Buckner's contract. Thank you.
Right. Yeah. Oh, they created it. That was one of the great, you know, things that Ballard said about, well, what why did you create the space? He said, just to see how Twitter reacted.
Yeah.
That was great. And he did it with a straight face.
Yep.
So it's not why he did it, but it created 14. They've got like $28 million in cap space.
How about that?
So there's and they could have signed a safety without that. They would have you can find
because they would have had what 14 million.
Yeah, you could have addressed Quentin's contract or you could have done it.
Right.
This gives them more flexibility or can sustain flexibility.
Oh, come on, you know it's going to just sit in escrow.
I know. Well, but you got to keep in mind. And here I am defending the team. You do have to plan for next year where you're going to have. Are you going to bring Ryan Kelly back? I would for like a 2 year deal, like they did Costanzo, and it turned out being a 1 year deal. And I keep just reminding people, if Bernhard Raimann is your left tackle and he plays like a left tackle, you have to pay him like a left tackle, which is going to be
it's pricey.
$16-17 million a year
at least.
Which you sort of hope you have to do that.
Yep.
You hope you have the opportunity to do that because you know as much as we talk about without a quarterback you can't play, without a left tackle. It's hard to run an offense.
Yeah, we saw what it was like without Costanzo.
Right.
We had a couple years of that, so we don't want to see it anymore.
Yep. And whenever Costanzo was out, like that was the stat. When Costanzo misses a game, the Colts
remember how we argued the most
him and T.Y. back between because when T.Y. missed the game also.
Well, or is it, who's your most valuable lineman? Is it Nelson Kelly? No, it's Costanzo.
It's Costanzo, yeah.
It's Costanzo because there's always going to be a drop off and. It paralyzes your offense when you can't protect the quarterback.
Yep, completely. So that's what we have for the first round there for the Colts and a little bit of analysis beyond that. How about we dive right into Dave's All-RAS mock draft?
I'm excited.
Yes, as you should be. Dave's All-RAS draft.
These aren't in film, they've got the Razzies, is it?
Yes.
It's the really the bad stuff.
Yes.
This is good Razz.
Exactly, it is. All right. So,
tell everybody what Razz is.
Razz, of course, as you all know, if you are a devoted listener to our Colts Blue Zone podcast, is relative athletic score. The relative athletic score is combined from several different metrics of a player, including height, weight, bench press, shuttle run, three-cone drill, vertical jump, broad jump, and then 40-yard dash time plus 10 and 20-yard splits. Those are all the main numbers
and
there.
And teams believe in it.
They certainly do because if you have traits and you have coaches, well, coaches can coach traits. So if you believe in your coaches, drafting players that have high athletic scores and high intelligence. Let's throw that together, of course. Raz has nothing to do with how smart you are. It's just how your physical.
Or your character.
Right, or your character.
Which Ballard made it very clear that character is
right. You got
pretty, pretty paramount to the Colts.
Got to evaluate
to a point.
Both of those as well. However, Raz is important too. And it's not.
I'm surprised you haven't got a jersey on it says Raz.
Exactly. It's not the end all be all of everything because, like we said the other week, DeForest Buckner's Raz out of 10 was like a 2 point something. It was just a stunning.
You get
number.
Dead for signing your name.
I know exactly, which was Chap's joke, and it's still funny even a couple of weeks later. But anyway, here we go. Dave's all Raz draft. Going in with only 7 picks, that was never going to happen. And at 15th overall, I got to a point where, you know, Brock Bowers was gone, and there were plenty of options available for me that I could take. But since there were plenty of options, that means that I could also trade back. So from 15, the Indianapolis Colts engineer a trade with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, moving back to number 26.
So that's a long drop.
It is.
But
it
go
is
ahead.
It is a little bit of a drop down there, 9 places. So I get the 57th overall pick. That's in the second round. And a third round pick next year. So I drop 9 places for a second round pick and a third round pick next year. So at number 26, the Indianapolis Colts select Cooper DeJean, cornerback. Iowa Hawkeyes.
Some people have them taking him
at 15.
At 15.
Yep, yes, they do. And I would be pretty happy if they took him at 15. I think I would be if I'm a Colts fan. The reason that I like Cooper DeJean is, number one, his RAS score is a 985. That's a really good mm-hmm. score.
He's the top-rated cornerback in this class that we have RAS for.
And with all the guys who are first-round talents, they're all around 6 foot. Nate Wiggins is a little bit taller at 6'1". But I don't like him to the Colts like at all, really. He's like he doesn't have the length, I think, to be the guy the Colts want. Even though I think he's a pretty good corner, but DeJean has like he's still 6 foot. He's the biggest one of them all at 200 pounds plus. So there's been some speculation whether he could play safety. He could definitely play nickel corner as well because he's done that in college. But one thing that stands out to me is, man, the kid's a playmaker.
Always like, around the ball.
Exactly. And since Shaquille Leonard was no longer Darius Leonard, the Colts have needed playmakers on the defensive side of the ball. They don't have them, really, right now. Not in the same level that Leonard was. And, like, can Kenny Moore? Yes, he does, obviously. We saw it the other year.
Julian Blackman
had 4 interceptions last year. That was pretty good. But, like, I think the Colts need to have more dynamic players. And that's why I decided to go with DeJean. And also thinking, I don't know if he can do kickoff returns as well. He did that a little bit in punt returns at Iowa. That's not entirely why I made this pick. I made the pick because I think the Colts need to get more dynamic on defense. Might need to take the ball away better.
Yeah, the special team stuff is kind of a throw-in bonus,
right.
You know, if you
well,
need
well,
it.
If DeJean's your starting corner, then let Dallas Flowers return kicks, which he's done.
Exactly. So, and also he was a really good zone defender in college, and the Colts play zone more mm-hmm. than anyone else in the NFL.
And a Big Ten guy.
And
we know that Chris Ballard does like Big Ten
guys.
That's
right. So Cooper DeJean at number 26. So down we go at 46. I worked another trade. This one I wasn't overly happy with, to be perfectly honest. This trade, I think I would have, like, in reality, I would have wanted a little bit more. But since I got that pick at 57 in the from my first draft, like, I was okay with sticking with one second-round pick. So here it's at 46, I traded with the Carolina Panthers for number 65, which is the first pick in the third round, the very first pick. Pick number 101, which is the very first pick in the fourth round. And also a third-round pick next year. So right now I've got 2 third-round picks next year. So basically I traded my 2 to move down. It's 20 spots, which is a big one. I get a fourth-round pick and then a third next year. So like I said, this was one that I wasn't overly happy with. I don't think this was a trade that Chris Ballard would make. But I wanted to pick up some more picks just to take a few more swings and get a few more players in this all-Raz draft so that if I have more darts, as Chris Ballard says, I can maybe hit 1 or 2 more players. So anyway, then we're 57. So this is a pick I got from Tampa Bay in my first trade. At 57, the Indianapolis Colts select Ricky Pearsall, wide receiver, mm-hmm. out of Florida. Old friend of Anthony Richardson there with the Florida Gators. He's a 6'1". He's a little bit small at 189 pounds. I think he can hopefully add a little bit of that. But his explosiveness was really what helped him stand out in the RAS category. He had a 42-inch vertical, which is ridiculous. So he can get up. Also runs a 4.41. Had elite speed stats, explosion, and agility stats entirely. His RAS score was a 9.91 out of those receivers. I kind of had the option at 46 before the trade. I was thinking Pearsall or Xavier Leggett, the wide receiver out of South Carolina, because those are two guys right around that range that that are kind of mocked to the Colts or to other teams in that area. But again, like I said, I wanted a few more darts to throw at the board to see if I can get someone. So right now we have, those are my two trades, so no more trades. So we have Cooper DeJean, we have Ricky Pearsall. We go down to 65. So this is what I acquired in my trade for my second round pick. So the first pick in the third round, the Indianapolis Colts select Braylon Trice, defensive end out of Washington. This is my one pick that was not a big RAS score. I had to go with one. Trice's RAS is only a 7.46. So I took Trice because every scouting evaluation you see of him, like the word they have is relentless, like relentless energy. And this to me is a Shane Steichen pick. Like Shane Steichen talks about relentless all the time.
One of the words that's in the end zone, the practice fields.
Exactly. So I think that this is a Shane Steichen pick in this draft, that he would love to see a guy like Braylon Trice bring his relentless energy to the Colts defensive line. And if he can develop into an elite pass rusher, that's fantastic, because I don't think you're going to unseat Quiddy Pay or Samson Ebukam as your starters right now if we're into the third round of the draft. But you can bring this guy off the bench and have him just be relentless for, you know, 20% of the snaps, 15, 20% of the snaps, and see what he develops into. So that was my, like I said, my one pick that was really not a high RAS score, but one guy that I really, like, I could absolutely see the Colts taking a swing on in this draft. We go down to number 82. So this is the Colts' normal third-round pick here. They select Tanner Bordellini, center out of Wisconsin. This is, of course, a Chris Ballard pick because it's a Wisconsin kid, and he's a lineman at a 9.77 RAS score. He had a smaller size at 6'4", 303 pounds. That's not that small to me. I don't know. You know, I look at those numbers and I'm like, okay, maybe it's not the best, but he had elite, so like top 20% in everything else in his agility in particular was ridiculous. His three cone gave him a 9.99 score. So basically, out of the history of evaluating these players, only one center has had a better three-cone drill than Tanner Bordellini out of Wisconsin. And like you said, Chap, trying to shape things up for the future on the interior, thinking about the future of Ryan Kelly and also of Will Fries. My next pick kind of has to do with that, too. I went back-to-back offensive linemen in the middle of this draft.
That sounds like a thing Colts would do.
It wouldn't surprise me.
Interior offensive lineman, too, with a guard in the, this is the first pick in the fourth round now, a pick that I picked up in my in one of my trades. Guard out of TCU, Brandon Coleman. He had pretty average height and weight, but was elite everything else. He had a 34-inch vertical at 313 pounds. He jumps 34 inches off the ground. That's ludicrous. And his RAS score is also ludicrous. It was a 9.97. Like, this guy, I think, is one the Colts could absolutely, I could absolutely see the Colts taking and penciling him in as your interior kind of main backup there. You've got Blake Freeland as your main guy on the outside. This guy could be your main guy on the inside. And who knows, if you really like him, you can let Will Fries walk in a year or two. So I really like Brandon Coleman out of TCU as a 9.97 RAS score guy. We go down in the fourth round to the pick that was the Colts pick in this round. I have another wide receiver, but he could even be a tight end. Johnny Wilson, wide receiver out of Florida State. He is 6'6", 231 pounds for a wide receiver. That is a mammoth dude, but still can run at 4.52 speed. So he's still a fast guy, 37-inch vertical. So if 6'6 wasn't enough, he can also jump 37 inches off the ground.
Boy, what a tight end room you'd have.
Exactly.
Athletically.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm not putting it out of the question to move him to tight end, but come in and see what he does. And if he's good enough to be a wide receiver, if he has the, you know, the quick twitch to be that in the NFL, then go ahead, leave him there. But if not, well, move him into the tight end room and see what he can do there. 9.7 flat was his RAS score. Now we go to the highest RAS score on this list. Pick number 151 here in the fifth round. The Avon Orioles running back, Isaac Garendo. 6 foot, 221 pounds. Out of Louisville, of course, college as well, but here in Central Indiana. He was very good at Avon. He played wide receiver for the Orioles. I just remember on Friday nights, every night calling his name.
You'd have a highlight from
exactly,
him.
Because he would get behind the defense and score a 45-yard touchdown. And Garendo is also the guy who backed up Jonathan Taylor at Wisconsin at running back. He's the guy that Jonathan Taylor always said that hit 25 miles per hour in a sprint. And Taylor himself was never able to do that, so he was always impressed with Garendo. Garendo has spoken about how much he likes Taylor and how much Taylor impacted him. They reunite here, and that's my running back pick, Chapo. A big guy, but also a fast guy. 4.33 speed. 9.9, Isaac Garendo in the RAS score.
You have any idea what JT was?
Actually, I'm sorry. Brandon Coleman is my highest RAS score with 9.97, but Isaac Garendo just 9.9 flat. A JT, I do not know, but Matt can look that up.
Well, maybe. You know how that website is.
Right, exactly.
Sometimes.
Exactly. Take your time with I can do that later. I'll finish this, and then you guys can get talking. And then I'll find it, because I think I can find it pretty easily. Dominique Hampton at 191 overall, a safety out of Washington. He's 6'2", 215 pounds, has elite size, and had 20 reps on the bench press, which was also in the elite range. 4.51, 40, which is pretty good for being that big. Like what I was really impressed with Hampton was his wingspan. He's got 6'7 wingspan, 33 inch arms. Jonathan Taylor was a 9.51, by the way. RAS score. So, yeah, pretty good himself. And then with my final pick in the seventh round, here's my linebacker chap, all the way down in the seventh round to fit in somewhere on special teams. Jordan McGee out of Temple. And before that, Dover, Delaware from Dover High School. 6'1", 228 pounds. Had pretty elite everything besides his smaller size and weight. But that's fine, for a linebacker. 6'1", 228 pounds, what you're trying to do with him. 4.55, 40. RAS score 9.6. So that's my draft. I had nine guys there. Average RAS score of 9.51. But every one of them is one that I think fits a need that the Colts have and is in the same type of player that the Colts look for. So
the only thing, and I would press Ballard on it, is he was asked this last week in a different way, but does this roster require 9-10 more draft picks?
They got 12 draft picks last year. Yeah,
that's
that
what
I'm
saying. And they had 9 or something the year before, whatever it was, and all but like two of those guys.
See,
are
most of those
team.
Guys are still with the team.
So at what point do you have too many, if you can have too many, developmental players? And three of those guys last year were on IR. So I understand what you're doing with more, and his point is correct. The more you have, the better chance of hitting on guys. But I'm wondering if this roster is at the point that you can have too many developmental players.
I think that's a very fair question. Not elite players,
but guys who are going to require special teams, and it is so. But from a coaching point of view, give me all you can.
Right.
But with the way this roster is constructed, I would be fine with 5 draft picks, 6 draft picks, as long as, like he said the other day, you want as many to hit as you can, but if you hit on 2 or 3 that they're going to play.
Right.
So, and their first couple of picks have got to play. Mm-hmm. Whatever positions that we disagree on or whatever, they have to play. So, but Raz, again, I think that's always going to be a tiebreaker for them, if not a driving force to get to the pick initially.
Yep. And Matt, I think me picking a couple of big offensive linemen in the middle of the draft is not something that would be the most popular selection, but
you know what would be the strangest is you've not taken a defensive lineman.
Yeah, I was thinking about that.
Braylon Trice, defensive end out of Washington, was my one pick.
But they did. Somebody had him taken, again, one of the early mock drafts, had him taken the Texas tackle.
Right.
Murphy.
Yeah,
which
Murphy.
The work they've done in the offseason – It lessens the need to bring in a player.
Maybe they were listening to some of our old Colts Blue Zone podcasts when I was talking about maybe they let Grover Stewart go and then sign go that way in the draft. But now that Grover Stewart is back,
yeah,
and they signed Raekwon Davis.
And Tavon Bryant, they brought him back.
And so, no, not anymore. We're well past that.
Yeah, if they had not re-signed one of those guys or they hadn't brought in the guy from Miami.
But this guy is an edge guy. Which I could see if they thought an edge guy can come in and give you 20 plays, 15 plays of really good, you know, complementary play with the other people you've got, I can see that.
Right. I agreed. So now we sit back and wait if I got anything.
Okay, so
anything
if
good.
You...
And I added 2 third round picks for next year's draft too. How about that?
You added draft picks. You got more for next year's draft, yeah. And you try to hit all their couple spots.
You and Chris are like in lockstep.
We are exactly. We are one in thought and mind.
So as you sit here today, not necessarily a player, but what will they do at 15?
I think they trade back. I think that's what's going to be not out of the first round, but I think they trade back
to
the first round.
And I know you're not knowing.
I would love to see them take Thomas, the wide receiver, out of LSU. I think that's the most fun pick that you could have if you're trading back.
17 or 18 touchdowns?
17 touchdowns. Led all of Division I last year.
A great vertical receiver.
Yes.
Which is what the Colts desperately need.
Yep.
And what do you think they do, Matt?
It, gun to my head, I say they trade back not too far, but they trade back in the first round. They get a wide receiver, either Brian Thomas, I'd be good with that, or the guy from Texas, because he's got a tremendous RAS score as well. Adonai Mitchell.
Adonai Mitchell,
he is the number one RAS guy of those who were tracked in the pro days.
Yep.
I say they either stay put or trade back a few spots for receiver. I just don't see them loving a receiver so much to move up to 8 or 9,
right?
It would be unbattler-like, except that he's proven that if you like a guy, you go get him. It wasn't drafted; it was DeForest Buckner. I mean, he gave up a
first round pick.
Was it number 11?
Might have been, yeah.
11 or 13 maybe. 13 was. Maybe. So if you really and it's kind of like what Jim Irsay said on Jonathan Taylor, you like the guy so much, go get him. And if you like the guy that much, let's even say Brock Bowers. Can you imagine Shane Steichen with that with a Dallas, with probably a bigger Dallas Clark,
one who could block a little bit better too?
Well, Dallas couldn't block. You know, a man's got
let's
to
be
know,
fair.
A lot better.
A man's
I guess,
got
I
to
say.
Know his limitations. but like what Irsay said, if you like him, go get him. And if you like him that much, then what you have to say is how much are you willing to give up for him? Now again. Going to 5 or 6, if Ballard does that, we need to check to see who's running the draft room, because it's hard to see Ballard doing that.
Right.
But if you like a guy that much, move up, give up something. Boy, to give up a number one pick next year. Going to 9, you wouldn't have to do that, don't you?
I don't think a number one next year, no.
So you give up a 2 this year and something next year.
Maybe there's a pick swap after that. Like
if you like the guy that much, if you like him that much, go get him.
Yep. And it will know, like, if the reassurance that you can have as a Colts fan is if the Colts do something like that, then you know that's the guy that they want. They're they're pinning their hopes on that guy.
And if people say, well, no one else had it, it doesn't matter. It's obvious they had that guy pegged as being the guy, whether it's Neighbors, whether it's Odunze. I'm not going to mention the other guy's name because it'll get the fan base fired up about
say we're going to trade our entire offensive line in order to
it'll be a Ricky Williams trade the entire
on.
Draft.
Yes,
but
gosh.
Again, like, the point you made is accurate. If they move up, it's because they really, really like that guy.
Mm-hmm. And we have just about 24 hours until we find out which guy the Colts like, or which strategy,
or which guy they didn't like, and they move back.
Exactly, or they like nobody. And they just trade out of it.
Or they just trade down 3 times and end up with 10 draft picks.
Exactly. And then their entire roster, as Chap alludes to, is a developmental roster.
You got guys.
Exactly.
You don't win in the NFL with guys.
You want some good guys, some dynamic guys.
Replace your third stringers with your third stringers.
Yeah. Nobody wants that. Everybody wants to be excited. And so I hope all you Colts fans are excited for the draft. Should be a fun couple of days there from Detroit, Michigan. We encourage you to subscribe to us on the Colts Blue Zone podcast. Gets delivered to your podcast listening device as soon as it drops. We will see you next week after a very active weekend. So take care. This has been the Colts Blue Zone Podcast.